Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. Glad to have you listening on a daily basis here at Faith Radio. Neil Stavem here, RT there, Grace at the phones. We are just 3 weeks away today, right? 3 weeks away from our fall fundraiser.
It's true. Right? The time just flew by. We're almost there.
It is coming. Yeah, hate to be talking about fall. And, of course, with in Minnesota, the State Fair, of course, begins this week. And so that's why it's, you know, we're going to be in the low 90s for couple of days.
But the food will make up for it.
Well, yes, probably. Although, if you don't collapse standing in line to get it, probably. This, by the way, tonight, this is a blue moon night tonight. Did you know that?
What?
The once in a blue moon. This is the, normally it's a blue moon if it's two full moons in a month.
Yeah.
But it's also called a blue moon, as I understand it, if there's four within a season. So
wow. Do you anticipate your life changing because of the blue moon?
I might sit down at the piano and play a little bit of, you know, the song. Just
you want to sing now or just
no.
Okay.
No. All right. I actually want to get to today's topic because okay. that will be much more meaningful than our limited attempts at meteorologic information. I'm looking forward to today's discussion because we're going to spend some time talking about a reality of a growing number of families that is being children diagnosed with some neurobiological diagnosis. So maybe it's a learning disability of some sort. It's bipolar. It's ADHD. It's OCD. It's Asperger's, which we call autism. And we're going to find out about that today, and I want to, by the way, give you an opportunity to join our conversation because we have in studio today Mary Wangren, who is, among other things, she's a Christian, she's a businesswoman, she's a speaker, a trainer, an advocate, a wife, sister, daughter, a dedicated volunteer at her church and in scouting. She's a mother of two children, a 21-year-old son with a primary diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome, and characteristics of ADD and OCD, and a 19-year-old daughter who has anxiety and ADD. And she doesn't have any initials behind her name other than she has a degree in biology and momology. And she's an advocate for those children and young adults who don't fit in because they display characteristics of neurobiological diagnosis. And she never wants a child or parent to go through what she and her son went through when he was younger. And we met Mary Wangren here a few months back, and just looking for a way to have her on with us today. So, Mary, welcome to Faith Radio and Connecting Faith.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here, Neil.
We want to talk a little bit about the reality of what you call the neurobiological diagnosis, and maybe we want to, you know, I mentioned some of those acronyms, the, you know, ADHD or OCD, and sometimes we don't, you know, we hear those who don't even know what they mean, but maybe we should just talk. Can we start talking about terms a little bit? But first,
absolutely.
You have a 21-year-old son, right?
Right. I have a 21-year-old son who was diagnosed back when he was like in second grade, okay. And his first diagnosis with was ADD. And I had it back then. Long and the short is, I started a support group because I felt like a parent who was on an island. When I dealt with the schools, I dealt with church, I felt like nobody really quite understood how I was feeling, and I knew there had to be somebody else out there that felt the way that I did. When George was then one of my support groups, we had topics, and it was a social worker who talked about Asperger's syndrome. And when she gave the definition or defined the characteristics, I was like, that's absolutely George. And it wasn't until he got into middle school and she was his social worker that she called me one day and said, Mary, do you think we should try to have him tested for Asperger's? And I said, yes, because one thing you'll find, and I think the listeners that are living with these different characteristics and diagnoses is the fact that a parent can kind of see what's going on, but it's really hard to admit when their child seems like they're a little bit different than a neurotypical child. And when you finally have your child diagnosed, you're like, okay, this is okay. Now I know, we know that there is absolutely something. But in the second breath, you say to you, I don't want to tell anybody, because there comes along stigmas and there's reputations that children have, and everybody has a story. And so that's kind of how I got into this thing, is when George was diagnosed with Asperger's, and when he was younger, we ran into some glitches, and some of them were really difficult. And I felt like I don't want any other parent to really go through some of this.
Well, before we get into maybe just some more diagnoses and things, I want to ask you, you know, it was second grade sort of the first diagnosis of ADD,
right?
But it wasn't until junior high that you got, that's kind of a long stretch of sort of maybe what, wondering and just maybe
wondering what's going on and dealing with it.
Or, yeah, maybe just kind of misdiagnosis or mistreatment or any of those things.
And right? It's funny that you said that, because when George was born, he was born in 1991, and little did I know that there were just coming out with some of these different diagnoses. The term Asperger's syndrome, just to give a rough definition, is basically these children are lacking social skills. They're very bright. There was a gentleman called Hans Asperger's. He was a doctor of behavioral science, and back in the 1940s, Hans was studying four individual young boys, and he defined them as little professors because they would super hyper focus on particular subjects. What they lacked was social skills. The kids didn't always look at people in their eyes, and they, it's funny because they lacked the characteristics of social skills that many of us naturally grow into as we grow older. But what happened was, a lot of people, because he was in Austria, it was in German, so translation was very limited. But also during World War II, his research and the place that he lived was bombed, and so a lot of the information was lost. A lot of doctors were kind of refuting what he was saying because of this autism piece. And it wasn't until the 1990s did a Dr. Wing come up with some of the studies that he had done. And she went back and basically went after those studies, tried to see where they landed. And it wasn't until the 1990s did the Asperger and the autism diagnosis really start coming to be prevalent.
You talk about rings of coexisting diagnosis. Let's kind of expand. It's not
what
just
this is.
The, yeah, there's,
okay.
There's a number of kind of related areas.
Right. Like this. Well, first of all, a lot of people are familiar with ADD. They hear about ADD, ADHD, and what a lot of people don't realize is it really is composed of three different items. One is hyperactivity. Those are the kids that are constantly on the move. They blurt out. They don't think before they move. They might cross the street without looking. Then you have the inattentive. Those are the ones that sometimes sit back and look like, especially in school, that they're paying attention, but it's going right over their head. And then there's a mixture of both of them. So that's your ADD characteristic. Then you also have the autism piece. And the autism is basically when there's serious developmental problems, and they end up being called part of the autism spectrum disorder. And it appears very early in childhood, but it basically limits the effect a child has in both communication and interaction with individuals. Then you've got bipolar disorder. Those are the kids that some people call it manic depressive disorder, but it's associated with the mood swings, the highs and the lows. And you've got anxiety. You've got learning disabilities, the kids that are having problems with reading and writing. And even within learning disorders, you have dyslexia. You've got the kids that have a learning disorder that has to do with math concepts. You've got the nonverbal learning disabilities. So all of those, when you put them together, a lot of them have characteristics of each other. You know, the ADD piece, you have children that you hear that have learning disabilities, but they also have ADD. You have kids that have oppositional defiant. These are the ones that basically everybody thinks they're just being naughty because they can. So you take these, and the characteristics, they kind of blend over each other. If you look at, like, the Olympic rings, okay, and in the areas where they cross over, that's where the characteristics kind of have what I call a synergistic relationship. And that's why I use the term neurobiological diagnosis, because when I speak about this and when I train adults on how to work with kids like this, almost it doesn't necessarily matter what the diagnosis is, what the words are. It's the characteristics and what the kids do when they're acting and acting out and just living every day.
And again, it seems like many of these probably wouldn't necessarily be diagnosed fully until they get into a school situation, right? Because it seems like it's sort of tied around interaction with others and learning, right?
Exactly. So. And a lot of times, but I have to say, is people are finding that they're getting diagnosed earlier. I mean, I hear about children that 3 and 4 years old that are getting diagnosed. But the thing is, I think that's really funny, is the fact that we all have a little something-something. Okay. People will joke about it. They have moments where what I call squirrel, where you get distracted and then you forget what you were talking about. Everybody has a little bit of that. It's when it literally takes over an individual's life and they cannot function neurotypically and successfully, whether it be at school, Sunday school, even at home, working with their sibs, being at daycare, being out in social settings, birthday parties. That's when you start to notice that things are just maybe not spot on.
We're talking today with Mary Wangren, who's no relation to Walt.
Absolutely. I wish I was.
Yes, and but we're glad that she's here. And I know that this is going to be a program that will be helpful to you or you know, someone that you know. So you may have a question you want to join with us. Mary provides training and speaks on behalf and advocates on behalf of training special parents of special kids to work, bring people together in schools, churches, and civic groups with resources and understanding. And we're talking more about just some of these neurobiological diagnosis issues. We're going to get into questions about, now what, if you have a diagnosis like that, the importance of support groups, social impact, how do we interact with the teachers and Sunday schools and all those kinds of things. You have a question for us, join us online at myfaithradio.com, and then you can click on the Connecting Faith show page. If you want to shoot us an email, there's a link right there, myfaithradio.com. Or you can give us a call on the phone, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Maybe you have a child that has had a diagnosis there, and you're running into some challenges or you'd like to start a support group in your community. I'm not sure if there is one or how to get going on that or just where to find some other resources. Call us and we'll talk with Mary about it. 877-933-2484. More in a moment.
When in 2 Corinthians 13:13 it says, "May the love of God and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you," well, what does that mean? Who is the Holy Spirit? A ghost? Like Casper, the friendly one? And should I be depersonalizing the Holy Spirit as some kind of force within me, thinking of him as an it? Hey, this is Debbie Griffith with Everyday Matters. The Holy Spirit is not our conscience, or like some Eastern religions falsely believe, just some small speck of God that lives within us. The Bible tells us that God's Spirit is fully a person with all his own individual traits. He speaks, inspires, guides, convicts, comforts, and encourages. He can be lied to and grieved. All these traits are functions of personality. Jesus always referred to him in that light. He used the personal pronouns he and him, but never the impersonal pronoun it. God's Spirit is a unique member of the Trinity, and one we have the privilege to be in the presence of every day. For more encouragement, visit DebbieGriffith.com.
Can you hear me? Am I getting through tonight? Can you see him? Can you make him feel all right? If you can hear me, let me.
It's 18 past the hour, and we're talking today about special kids and some of the challenges that they endure in our world today, and talk about some of the diagnoses of OCD or learning disabilities or bipolar or ADD or Asperger's, which we call, I guess, autism, officially Asperger's syndrome. Mary Wangren is a mother, a speaker, a trainer, an advocate, volunteered at her church and in scouting mother to her 21-year-old son had a primary diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome and characteristics of ADD and OCD, and has a 19-year-old daughter as well. And we're talking a little bit about that as Mary has set up support groups and has become sort of a speaker and advocate in this area. If you have some questions for us today, you're welcome to join us at 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. Or, of course, you can always go on Facebook. It's Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem. But Mary, I'm interested, just I guess as we try and learn more about these diagnoses of these neurobiological issues, do kids grow into it? Do they grow out of it? What have you found out?
Sometimes you feel like they do, but I would definitely say they do not. It never goes away. What happens is, as a parent and while schools and different resources work with these children, and as they grow up, they get used to living that way with the diagnosis, and they learn to adapt, and they learn to be successful because of accommodations. It's funny because my father, I remember when he had asked me one time as my son was growing older, getting into middle school, he said to me, "You know what, Mary? I think George is kind of growing out of this Asperger thing, don't you think?" And I laughed and I said, "No, Dad, he'll never grow out of it, but he learns to accommodate. And hopefully by the time, you know, he reaches adulthood, it won't be as obvious because he's got the accommodations."
And I assume, just like everything else, there's sort of stages of, I mean, if
absolutely,
there's maybe sort of early stage or advanced stage or something.
Well, and that's what sometimes makes it difficult for any child with a diagnosis like this. First of all, I use the term neurotypical rather than normal, because I think we all have a little something-something. So what is normal? But when a child is young, you kind of say, okay, is it because of the immaturity? Is it because they're just kids? You know, a lot of people say, hey, that's just boys. When they hit like third grade, when some of the social skills really start kicking up for a child, groups start to separate. You know, even the kids in third grade decide they know who's going to be the jocks, or they know who's going to be the musicians and whatnot. And I have to say, the kids with a diagnosis, they don't always quite fit in. So you start to see a little bit of a separation. Another really tough time as a parent that we sometimes have to just step back and watch what's going on is when they hit the teenage years and the hormones kick in. Sometimes you just have to stop and go, okay, is that diagnosis? Is that teenager? Is it hormones? Is it the fact that I'm a mom and I'm tired? No. But I mean, it's really sometimes difficult, and you need to sometimes step back. And sometimes that's why I love that song with Mark Schultz, because sometimes you just need to realize he's your son, he's your child. Step back, take a deep breath. When I learned to step back and look at other children, I realized my son wasn't so bad. You know, the kids that, I think it's because the kids with a diagnosis sometimes don't come off as being so bad in certain situations, because parents hyper-focus and want to make sure that in social situations their children are okay. And when you step back and you see a child that's neurotypical, you say, my kid's not so bad.
Do in terms of, I guess, that management, in terms of how to adjust, how to handle, how to cope, I would assume that maybe as a parent that you worked really hard on that, and were always
absolutely,
sort of, you know, kind of doing, you know, and that the child has to kind of absorb a lot of it themselves probably, and just sort of find their mean or median at some point.
Well, see, one thing that you find as a parent is, like I said, when your child is not what I call the perfect child, there are families that just come off, they are always winning the lottery, or and you know what I mean? Their kids are just successful at school and sports, and sometimes that intimidates parents, and you think, geez, what's wrong with my child? But what I was going to say is sometimes you have to reach out to the teachers or the schools, or like references, the webs. You know, I was on the internet all the time looking for help, trying to give me some, you know, some I guess solid footing so I knew what was going on. I was constantly working with my son, and using resources. That's one of the things that I found out. Some things I would not recommend. When George was in first grade, the school that he attended, the kindergarten was a separate class, but then they put first and second graders in a class, and then they had third and fourth. And it was really great because if your child was academically ahead, it really put him in a nice place, as well as if the child is behind. But what we found out in first grade is the teacher, that was back before we had a lot of email. I hate to admit it. It makes me feel so old. But the teacher created this journal that she would write in so that I could stay on top of where George was during school. And then it wasn't always the phone calls and all that. But what happened is it got to be a point when George would come home from school, instead of me hugging my child and seeing how his day was, I couldn't wait to get in the backpack to find out the journal. And then it was always negative. And I found out then I would get frustrated with George before he even had a chance to come in the door and take off his shoes. And so that's one tool I would not necessarily recommend. And So you were asking me about, you know, the different things for a child to learn. They do learn, but they need constant reminders. The thing that I like to describe about a child with a diagnosis, with a neurobiological diagnosis, is you find that I like to describe them as they're an Apple computer and we are IBMs. Okay. And I know the computer people out there will say to me, well, Mary, that's not always true. But the software that we put into an IBM does not necessarily work in an Apple and vice versa. So what you need to do is the techniques that you need to use for your child sometimes have to be done a little bit differently so they completely understand. Another thing is a lot of kids with diagnoses have a discombobulation, is what I like to define it, inside of them. They feel things are completely out of control. And what they do is they look to their environment to keep them organized. That's why these kids function in an organized environment. It's kind of funny because, an example, in elementary school, and we're heading into the fall now, you will find that teachers in elementary school will ask parents to get yellow notebooks and yellow folders for science. Blue, you know, everything matches. That way, when they are in school, the teacher will say, pull out your yellow notebooks and we're going to start mathematics today. The kids know what yellow is and they know they're right on task. When they get into middle school and to senior high, a teacher isn't asking them or telling them to grab your yellow notebook. The assumption is they already know what notebook they're going to be using for particular classes. And they've got specific teachers that are not all teaching the same subject. And I hate to say it, but the math teacher doesn't necessarily care what the English teacher is doing. That's where our students and our children need to learn these things in elementary school. But as they become members of the middle school or junior high class, the parents and the teachers together need to work on those continued skills. What I found for my son when he was in middle school and they had a locker, get a five subject notebook, because no matter where George was, he at least had five of the class's books right with him because he had five at one time.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Mary, we got a couple minutes before we bump up against a break, but we touched a little bit on resources. I'm just thinking, well, if I'm listening in Fargo or Sioux Falls or Waterloo or something, or wherever I might be, what are some of the best places to go or things that you found that were helpful in terms of resources? Let's take a couple minutes to talk about that.
Okay, I think the best resource out there is the internet. You know, and a lot of people even say Wikipedia. Be careful; those are all really strong places to go, especially when you want a hard definition and you want some strong characteristics. I love the Mayo Clinic's website. You can Google Mayo Clinic Asperger's, Mayo Clinic Learning Disability, Mayo Clinic Bipolar, and each of the pages that come up literally gives you the definition, the diagnostics, characteristics, and things that you can do to help. Another website that I love, especially for the ADD youth and young adult, is CHAD. I'm not, a lot of people don't talk about CHAD so much anymore. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it stands for Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. It's a national organization, but they also have them in locals, in states and areas. And it's always something that's good to look up. The National Institute of Mental Health. Fabulous website, because they again, you can go in there and then they have a where you can search and you can write the specific item. Autism Society is a national organization, but there's also in South Dakota, they've got three based on locations in South Dakota. They have it in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa. Every state pretty much has an Autism Society.
All right, we're going to continue with more in a moment here with Mary Wangren. Mary is a mom. She has a degree in momology and biology. She is an advocate for those children and young adults who don't fit in because they display characteristics of neurobiological diagnosis. And she's telling about a little bit about her story and some help, where she found some help. I want to talk a little bit about support groups, get into issues about how we can encourage our kids' teachers, how churches sometimes respond, and how we might do better that. And we'd be happy to take your questions, too. If you have some questions about autism, Asperger's, learning disabilities, those kinds of diagnoses, you can join us today at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We'll continue with Mary Wangren in just a moment.
And he'll break.
It's 32 past the hour, and today we're spending some time talking about a diagnosis that more and more, it seems, are hearing about or know about, autism or Asperger's syndrome. But there are a number of others related close to that, learning disabilities, OCD, bipolar, ADD, ADHD. We're getting some perspective from Mary Wangren. Mary is a mother, a wife, sister, and daughter, and a graduate of St. Olaf. She has a degree in biology and momology. She has two children. Her 21-year-old son has a primary diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. Her 19-year-old daughter has anxiety and ADD. And Mary's an advocate for those children and young adults who don't fit in our society. And Mary, I know you said that when you when your son was diagnosed, that you ended up starting a support group. But talk a little bit about the importance of support groups and what that did for you, or what you discovered when you thought, maybe I'm the only one who is experiencing this.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. The reason I started the support group is because I couldn't find one. And I'm a communicator, and I believe that when you talk to other people, you find out that you're not alone, and some of the things that you're feeling may be normal to what it is that you're going through. And so I went to one of our female minister at the time at our church, and she was very much involved in mental health. As a matter of fact, she's now left the ministry and is now a family therapist. And through the Christian, she's a Christian family therapist. And so anyway, I went to her and I approached her on the idea. And so we developed a name. We had to basically get a vision and determine what we were there for and what was our mission. And it basically was for parents. We had to do a lot of marketing, because we realized it wasn't just in our church, but it was in our community. And so we would do a lot of advertisement and things like that. I'll never forget the first meeting, I was nervous because I didn't know if anybody was going to show up. There were 45 women that showed up and one man. And a lot of times you only get one parent that can be a participant in these support groups because somebody needs to stay home with the kids. And as our group began to develop, it was first called Special Parents of Special Kids, and then it became a term, it was called TABLE, which was an acronym, which was Together Advocating for Our Children and for with Behavioral and Learning Needs. And what we started doing was we wanted to be positive. That's the thing about support groups. We even had women coming to our group because the main important thing was to be positive. We could sit there and complain about the schools. We could complain about the non-services or the financial or everything. But really what the point of it was, when people walked away that night, hopefully they felt better, learned something, and something they could take home and use. We met twice a month. One It was on Tuesday evenings we found. And what we did is once a month we would talk of just feelings, how you doing, where you're at, what's new, what happened at school or church. And then the second meeting was always having like a professional, a physician, an author, a variety of people that could come in that were professionals that could support us. And that group is what got me through many rough times. I'll never forget the time I came to the group, and I didn't even want to go to the group, and here I was one of the facilitators. And it was because it was right near the holidays, and I came home, and in my house we don't use paper gift wrapped. We use cloth bags. It's our way of helping the economy, helping the
environment.
The environment. So, sure. Thank you. My dad said how many trees were lost when you do Christmas paper. And so we did bags, and I came home and all of my son's bags were opened and they were just laying around the item that he was going to be getting. And I thought Christmas was ruined. He knew everything. I'd worked hard at getting some different things. And I went to the group that night and I was so bummed. And that's when I learned how difficult holidays actually are for kids with diagnosis because of their anticipation. They have such a hard time containing the excitement or the need to know what's in there that I found out. And now to this day, I don't put Christmas presents until like 5 days before, because it stops that anxiety of wanting to know what's going on. I found out, we talked about holidays and how difficult they are. Everybody is always excited and everybody's running around at the holidays. Well, these kids with NBDs, I find them, they almost absorb that electricity that they get off other people. You find that in the spring at school as well. When kids are bouncing off the walls from excitement near the holidays for Christmas, these kids are bouncing off twice as much. And when you're having your family and the relatives and the big table, and suddenly you're not eating on the schedule that you normally do, you're making fruit salad and yams, and you should be feeding kids for breakfast. And what you need to do is step back and realize that taking them out of their normal routine is a huge problem for these kids. And I learned through my group that, you know what, Mary, is it really a big problem if they're not at the table with everybody? Or when they're done eating in my family, everybody sat until everybody was done and you served dessert and you enjoyed the conversation. That doesn't work with my kids. I let them go. And I'll tell you, dealing with grandparents or aunts and uncles, that's a really tough one too. And sometimes we've even had parents that have come that have said, I've learned to say no to holidays, going to somebody else's house, because on top of all this changes, you're not at their home. They're losing their comfort zone. Sometimes it's better off just saying, I can't come tonight, or we'll do it on another day. And you have to be really strong about that as a parent.
It does remind you that, you know, as extended family, friends, and obviously, you know, teachers, I mean, we need to be pretty sensitive. And I would think probably in churches, too. I mean, my first thought when you were talking about support groups is what a great opportunity for churches to provide some support for caring for kids. But I'm sure there's probably many situations where even, you know, your kids coming to Sunday school probably wasn't the best situation, right?
No, it wasn't. And it's funny because I remember when my son was little, and I talk about my son and he knows about it. I've talked about him for years, and it's because I learn from my son. But I'll never forget when George was in Sunday school and they would come in and the kids would sing songs and they would march around and they could all settle down and listen to the story. George could not. And I was always there because I knew we might have problems, but I found myself holding and restraining him where he was kicking and screaming, and people would look at me like, what's wrong with your child? If I would have known then what I know now, I would have given George a little matchbox car or a book or a coloring crayon and paper. George literally had it in his IEP that he could doodle. George could go off and listen, very intelligent young man, but he didn't listen like everybody else. And if I would have known that, and it's funny that you say that, because education and training, that's why I'm a huge advocate at my church and other churches. We need to teach a Sunday school, and the confirmation teachers, they were all volunteers, but they don't come always with the tools. I've been brought into Sunday school at our congregation where we had have a family of quintuplets, and some of the boys have some diagnosis, and people didn't want those children in their Sunday school because they thought they were disruptive in the classes. And I found myself being in the class and helping the boys. And it was funny because I'd have a Sunday school teacher say, okay, now everybody watch me, and she always wanted everybody to look at her. Kids with diagnosis, they can't always look at the teacher. It's very hard. It hurts. It's painful. I found giving the boys crayons and a piece of paper that the mouth is quiet when the hands are busy. And they were busy not touching others, but busy on the paper. I found that even with my son, it was one tool that I've learned is I never go without a pen and a piece of paper. Because if he can doodle, I learned this from a therapist many years ago. When George was first diagnosed, our pediatrician wanted me to find out that a psychologist, those in the mental health field, wanted to confirm the diagnosis as a medical doctor. And I learned that day when George was sitting there, he was playing with fidgeting and he wasn't looking at the doctor. And I kept saying, George, look at Dr. Leslie. Look at Dr. Leslie. Until finally she said, Mary, he listens to me much better when he's playing with that than you trying to have him look at me. Because when he looks at me, he starts thinking about all other things, my glasses, my hair, everything around me, the pictures in the room. But if he's focused on what's in his hand, he listens. And I've taught a lot of people to do that. And I'll say, if you don't think that your child is listening when they're doing fidgeting, playing with whatever's in their hand, ask them to repeat it. And it's amazing. These kids can repeat it back verbatim. So, yeah, these things are really important. And understanding and training for the church people, whether it be the church council, the confirmation, the choir directors, that they understand where these kids are coming from. The hardest thing that I want to share with you, Neil, and I don't want it to sound really harsh, but it's true. The difference between a child with a neurobiological diagnosis and a child with maybe a physical disability or a disability that you can see is that kids with NBDs look neurotypical. And so when you look at ages and stages, people expect the same thing out of a child with a diagnosis as they do with a child that's neurotypical when you look at them sitting there. If you saw a picture of my son and many, many, many people, they all look neurotypical. But it's when they begin to move and their actions, and that's what gets in the way. And that's where a lot of people get really frustrated. And when I talk about that, I think about schools. When my son was first diagnosed, and I always say my son because, yes, I do have a husband, love my husband, but my husband used, after he was diagnosed, my husband would say to me, Mary, don't tell the teacher. Let's see if she finds out. Well, I'll tell you something, Neil. After 2 weeks, the honeymoon was over.
Yeah.
And I found out from my support group, because one of my other facilitators was is also an EBD teacher. And I found out that I would go to that open day or that open class for the first day to meet the teacher. The teachers, you want to talk to the teacher and you just want to tell them everything about your child. Well, there's 30 other kids around and parents all want to do the same. I found out making an appointment with the teacher for after, before school started, but after the open house. And then when you come and talk to the teacher, you write down on a piece of paper all the things that work for your child, things that set your child off. One thing you find, like the child with Asperger's and a lot of these kids, it's fairness. What is fair? You get to do this, so I should get to do this. How come you get to hold the ball and I don't get to hold? All the things that set your child off and all the things that are good for your child and the successes that your child can make as well. Then what you do is you make an appointment, you bring the paper, and you talk about it. Again, I always worry that I sound like Charlie Brown's mother, wah, wah, wah. But what I do is I go through it with the teacher, and then I hand it to the teacher, because when I walk away, whew, there's so much information, it's like a fire hydrant in the mouth. But when my son starts to crawl underneath his desk, hopefully she can grab that paper, look and see why he's doing and what would make him feel better so that it doesn't disrupt the class so much that I'm getting a call from the principal.
Did you ever deal with the issues? Well, maybe, you know, he shouldn't be mainstreamed, or I mean that is that the term? Well, we
that's just, a really good yeah. that's a really good point. We were in a fabulous school system, and I know that there's a lot of different school systems out there that are acknowledging, especially not so much the ADD. That's a child with ADD doesn't always get necessarily special services unless they get what they call. And that's one thing I advocate for parents to do is look at your school system, and look and see what kind of accommodations can be made for a child with a diagnosis. What I found is George was mainstreamed through school, but he was in a special program when he got into middle school. I was fortunate that our school had a group of kids that all have Asperger's syndrome. And these kids, as they got into middle school and high school, this was a place where some of the kids stayed and had English or math, or other kids like George was mainstreamed, but he had a study hall there. And it was a place where these kids felt safe. It was a place where the educators there, this was their specialty. They understood these kids. And they were the ones that, I hate to say it, but when you get in middle school and high school, all you have is a homeroom. You need somebody who gets this child. And that's where you would get it. And there would be social workers at your disposal. And so are there times, where no, these children may not do very well in mainstream. I'm going to tell you a funny story. George had a young man who I think he got a perfect score on his ACTs. He was a genius, or is a genius. It's not like he's gone anywhere. But the young man was so intelligent that he could not sit in a math or an English or a history class because he would find what, if he felt that the teacher was saying something wrong, he became argumentative and he would disagree and he would want to tell the teacher what he was doing wrong or what he was teaching wrong. So they found out that because he was so advanced, he was better off having his own classes. That was for the sake of himself as well as his peers and the teacher.
Mary Wanger is my guest today. We're going to continue talking in a moment. I've got a question we're going to get to. If you have a question or a comment, you want to join the conversation today. We're just talking about some characteristics of neurobiological diagnosis and how we can be a little more aware and maybe some encouragement for parents that are feeling like we're all alone. There's some help and hope available. 877-933-2484 is our phone number. 877-933-2484. More with Mary Wangerin in a moment.
This is Wayne Peterson, president of HCJB Global, with Beyond the Call.
The large church gathered at Sunday service, eagerly awaiting the arrival of their new pastor. As people walked around, noticeably one person stood out, a poorly dressed homeless man. Those he asked for some change for food refused to give it to him. And when he tried to sit in the front row of the church, he was immediately asked to please sit in the back. At the start of their church service, the elders asked the new pastor to come up. Everyone cheered until they saw the homeless man walk up to take the pulpit. Yes, the homeless man was their new pastor. He began to read Matthew 25:40. Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Being a Christian is more than something we claim. It's something we live out. Go beyond the call. And then visit us online at hcjb.org. That's hcjb.org.
Forty-nine past the hour. You're listening to Connecting Faith. My guest today, Mary Wangerin. Mary, among other things, has a degree in mammology and also biology. She's a St. Olaf graduate, a wife, a mother, and has two children, and we're talking about Asperger's syndrome, which her oldest son, 21-year-old, diagnosed with that, and her 19-year-old has some anxiety and ADD. In fact, anxiety is one of the issues that one of our callers wanted to know about. In fact, a couple of them, one posted a question, the other called in. Talk more about the anxiety disorder. You mentioned at the top of the show, this listener says, a few of my family members, all women, struggle with that. And let me just lump it in with this next one as well. This listener, Christy, says a friend of hers struggles with extreme anxiety, has trouble interacting with people even over the phone. Is very smart, but has gone through a breakdown, is on medication. Could this be Asperger's? Talk a little about anxiety.
Well, anxiety is very debilitating. As a matter of fact, is And when you talk about, or you said about the person that had sent you the note about her friend having a breakdown, because I'm a mom and I am not a health mental health provider, definitely going to a physician, and it sounds like this person is on medication. But just to give you some things about anxiety, what happens sometimes is a person with anxiety, I think about my daughter. She used to come home and she'd have homework. And what she would do is she'd pile her homework all next on the kitchen table. And looking at the books as a whole was overwhelming. And she would literally have a meltdown. When I took all the books away and set one down and said, you know what, it's one at a time, one bite at a time, it started helping her. Josie gets very anxious when you talk about talking on the phone. It's because they're worried. They're already thinking about what they're going to do wrong. So what I started doing with my daughter and my son is we would write down the things that they needed to do when they were on the phone. A greeting. If they answered the phone, a greeting and find out who they're calling for. And if they were doing the calling, I would have them call. My son loves gaming electronics, and that's another topic on its own. But when the kids would call, I'd have them call, say their name, and ask them what they wanted. It would all be written down. And then if the person came back and said, yes, we have it, then I had what to do in those scenarios with the responses. It was started out very slow, very short, and then they would hang up. Then we would talk about how they felt during the entire process. Because if they were anxious, I have to say it does come out sideways. And I think, especially with girls, you get a lot of screaming and a lot of yelling, slamming doors, a lot of emotion when they're anxious. And what I do is I allowed for my child is for Josie, when she go through these moments, I'd let her kind of settle down, have her music. Then I would go in and I'd sit on her bed and I would talk to her very slowly. She was stimulated. Her arms, her legs, if I touched her legs or I wanted to rub her leg, she wouldn't even want me to touch her. It's not that she didn't love me or I was doing anything wrong, but she was being so overly stimulated that her nerves were even being affected.
Let's take, we won't have time to get to probably all our calls. We'll go to line one. Chris is calling in. He said he's been diagnosed and wondering about some steps. Chris, go ahead. You're on with Mary Wangren.
Yeah, I probably had this as a child, but I was never diagnosed. And I was diagnosed a year ago when I was 49. Now, what can an adult do to deal with this in a way that blends in with society and can function better and all this.
Okay. Chris, just if I can ask, were you diagnosed with ADD or Asperger's or?
Both.
Both, okay. What I would suggest is, I don't know if you are seeing a therapist, but there are therapists out there that deal specifically with Asperger's and ADD for adults. There's also some fabulous books. Are you married? With
no.
Children?
No.
There are some wonderful books out there, and I would Google just adult Asperger's, and they have books that are specific on how to work with Asperger's, how to be social with Asperger's as an adult, how to there's ones on dating and friendship. They're all geared towards adults, and I would recommend doing that, and if there is a support group.
Good. Chris, thank you. We're going to try and squeeze in another call here before our time is gone. Let's see, Elaine. Well, I think she just checked in here. Elaine has wondered how your life is today, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine also has a grown son with Asperger's and is wondering how your son is coping. So.
Hi, Elaine. My son he's doing really well. We've got a little bump in the road with his college education right now. God gave him a fabulous music voice and his ability to sing. And that's what he wants to do is something musically. Well, to be honest with you, what he wants to do is if you're into gaming, he listens and plays games, but he listens to the music of games and he wants to be a writer of music
sure.
for games.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And, but you know what? there's something that's got to pay the bills. And so we're coping with that. We're doing really well. I guess the thing that's really exciting for me is my son graduated from high school. He is an Eagle Scout, very successful. But he is right now, we're dealing with what kind of future and what kind of job, because that is now one of the newest, hardest things to deal with is employers with kids and people with diagnosis.
You talk about Scouts. I know you've worked a lot with the Scouts. Is that do you recommend that as a good program for kids with some of these diagnoses?
I absolutely do, because the thing about Scouts is a lot of people put their children in Scouting is because it is a place where it should be safe. It's considered a safe haven. It's also an opportunity because Scouts focus on character building and life skills and service and giving to others. And it is an organization that accepts these kids, or they try to, or that's what we're trying to do right now is teach these adults on how to accept these kids. But yes, Scouting was absolutely fabulous. A lot of life skills come out of there.
Good. We only have about maybe 2 minutes or so left, and we haven't talked really about medication or food or any of those kinds of things. Any other sort of summary things? While we have to have you back to go state round two here.
That's right. I guess what I'd like to share with everybody is step back. Prayers are awesome. My faith, I was telling you, Neil, and RT, that KTIS got me through some of the really rough times. My faith did. My family did. But I also think that it's important for people to understand that there are some absolutely fabulous people out there, famous people, that I don't believe they would be there if it wasn't for them having a diagnosis, because these kids think outside the box. They are creative and they're ingenious. They're very intelligent. It's just the way that sometimes things come out. I just want people to understand that people like Thomas Edison, George C. Scott, Walt Disney, Henry Winkler, I think people have heard that he has a learning disability. But one young man that has really inspired me is the story on Michael Phelps. He has ADD. And that young man, his mother was told that when he was in kindergarten, he would never amount to anything. But I think that being a little professor and these kids, I swear my son should be an agent or an attorney because his negotiation skills are amazing. But because they can hyper-focus, I think those are some of the things that allow these kids to be able to be successful. God gives them a strength each and every day for them to get up and go to school or go to work. And it is a strength that comes only, I have to say, through the faith.
Mary, we mentioned in terms of resources, different things, the Mayo Clinic, great website, a lot of resources there. Chad, I think, is it C-H-A-D-D?
Yes. That? Yes.
Okay. National Institutes of Mental Health, Autism Society, just and
correct.
Probably any of those places.
And PACER, they are known throughout the nation. PACER for Parents Advocating for Children.
Good. All right. Some good insight today.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate it.
Mary Wangerin joining us today. She's a mom. She's a speaker. She's a support group leader. She's an advocate. And is offering some great encouragement for us today. Again, if you missed part of the program, you can always catch it online. We post the show here after the broadcast at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.